mine and yours. And you don't want no pressure, what but a backup and withdrawal. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can crawl. And you don't want to see inside of my...
Chapter 33. Strop. Strop. Hiss. Tinkcha looked up from the latest cash scroll he'd been examining, still a bit dazed by just how much the Dai Li had been sitting on for centuries. He couldn't speak for the other elements, but there were earthbending forms here he'd never seen in all his decades as a teacher. And if some of these were what they hinted to be... Focus, he told himself. Something's not right. The shelter was still intact around them. Not an inconsequential thing, given Mei Shan was right to tease him about ignoring little things like walls crumbling in the midst of his studies. He'd once had an entire half-demolished building come down on top of him while he was excavating, and only noticed that he'd shunted everything casually away when it was suddenly too dark to read. Of course, given Mei Shan had been in the excavation with him, he'd shortly become very distracted indeed. Tinkcha. A breath against him, as she shivered in the darkness, shut away from sunlight. There's something I have to tell you. He shook away the memory of shock. He knew now, and so did their children. No more hiding. No problem with Shurong and Jinhai, still meditating with their lit candles off to one side, hidden from casual passerby behind rock screens. His youngest had been a bit giggly about showing a Dai Li what to do, but the boy seemed to have settled down now. For a firebender, meditation was evidently serious business. Near, but out of range of the occasional flare, Jia and Suyin were wrestling with some of his historical accounts of earthbender strike teams, comparing rescues in the text to the rough sketch in their sand tray of smuggled maps of where Mean was. Huojin was sitting with them, bemused, adding his own observations of guard operations in a low tone. Sitting by the stone screening the entryway, Luli was reading stories to Lim and Dayu before bed, another layer of warning in case someone barged in who didn't know about the firebenders inside. Ah, there. Jia glancing at her mother out of the corner of her eye as Mei Shan put the finishing touches on another knife to slip up her sleeve. Not something we're used to, any of us. How sharp do you need to make those? Tinkcha asked curiously. Not as sharp as a fine chef's blade. Mei Shan said plainly. It's a balance. You want them to go through flesh, but given their size, it's just as well if they slide across bone instead of cutting it. Jia said faintly. Is it okay if I say you? Of course it is. Mei Shan smiled sadly. We don't want to hurt people. We just want to be safe. She eyed the newly edged blade. And I want my son back, whole. And I rather don't care how many pieces I leave someone else in to do it, Tinkcha agreed silently, and had to put the scroll down, staring at nothing at all. Tinkcha? Mei Shang crossed the room to sit by him, rubbing her knuckles along the ridge of his cheekbone to ease some of the building headache. What's wrong? I'm not sure what our family is anymore, what I am, and what I may be becoming. Perhaps I should spend some time meditating myself, he admitted, trying to keep his tone light. I'm a bit upset. An enemy has our mean, Mei Shan said simply. Do you think the earth doesn't get angry? I lost Yi Jiao on the wall years ago, Tinkcha objected. This, it's different. Yi Jiao was your brother, and a soldier. Min is our son, Mei Shan said plainly. He was supposed to be training. He was supposed to be safe. We all were. She rubbed his back, leaning her shoulder against his. Of course you're angry. Use it. Don't let it use you. I... Tink just shook his head, pride aching. I've no idea how. Oma and Shu, that was hard to admit. He was a civilized, educated man. He knew history and all its ancient battles. How to deduce a smithy or a flower shop from shards centuries old. But this? To know all the paper battles he'd refought in his own mind were about to become a small, bloody reality? Start by leaning on the experts, Professor. Huojin gave him a wry smile, still haunted by the guards he'd had to leave behind. Xirong's good at this, or he wouldn't be alive. And from what he says, Maya's scary enough to almost do this herself. Listen to them, and listen to us, and ask. What do you always tell your students? There are no stupid questions? The guard nodded. We'll get him back. We will, Meishan agreed. He's Gyokuro's great-grandson. Even at this remove, Agni will watch over him. Gyokuro? Suyin looked interested. As well she might be. Meishang almost never spoke of her family tree or mentioned names. Fire Nation names, no less. He was a fire sage. Meishan nodded. When my family was listed, he's the one who smuggled me out and sent me here. She smiled sadly. He didn't want me to cry. He said it was his destiny to serve the Avatar. Because the fire sages are so in touch with the spirits. Xirong grumbled, candle flickering. Tinkcha gave him a look in askance. You're supposed to be... I know. But when you start mentioning avatars, I can't avoid listening. Self-preservation. The Dai Li cast a glance at Meishang. Seriously, honored elder sister... I know the Fire Nation holds a grudge against the Avatar, Kyoshi in specific. I don't know why, but you'd think someone really in touch with the spirits would know there's no way this war could ever be justified. Tinkcha winced. You know something. I know there are gaps in our history, Tinkcha said honestly. There are reports of the Wagyu and Water Tribe piracy before and after Qin's time. Then, about 320 years ago, the attacks all but cease. Suddenly, at the same time, there's a suspicious scarcity of court reports. Those that remain in relation to Avatar Kyoshi have a tone I might best describe as shocked, in the more moral of the counselors. Those that my research indicates were not seem rather smug. He paused. I also know that prying too deeply into whatever happened earned a stark warning to leave the past buried. Those who ignored that warning... Well, he gave the agent a pointed look. You don't know, Meishan said quietly. I'd heard all the Earth Kingdom knew. They might, Luli stated. We don't. Tinkcha felt the weight of eyes on him and bent his head in acknowledgement. I was younger and far more reckless when I first knew there were facts missing from our history. Then we had children, and I didn't want to pry into what might be best left resting in peace. Then you need to know, Suyin. Meishang nodded towards Amaya's side of the shelter. Would you see if Amaya's done for the night? You only want to tell it once? Huojin raised a brow as Suyin headed that way. I'll tell it as many times as I need to, Meishang said steadily, stirring Jinhai from his meditation with a few whispers. But if she truly is serious about Mushi, she should know the weight his family bears for all of us. A curious Water Tribe healer followed Suyin back, and Tinkcha sealed the doorway against casual listeners. Meishang let everyone get settled and drew a breath. This story, as it was told to me, Sometime later, Tingcha held his children in numb shock. That was spirits. You're saying for over 200 years? Huojin was glassy-eyed as Luli cuddled their girls. The Fire Nation begged to have the ruling rescinded. Meisheng said quietly. It's said that as prince, Fire Lord Zogu, Sozin's father, went to plead before Kyoshi herself in her fading years. She shook her head. A great name, forced to beg. The indignity must have whipped Sozin's soul like chains of ice. No way to take revenge for your people, Amaya said, voice bleak. Tui and La. But why didn't he just ask Roku? Luli spoke up. You said they were friends. Avatar Roku would not return from his training for Fire Lord Zogu's funeral, Meisheng said bluntly. Shirong made a sudden, strangled noise of comprehension and buried his face in his hands. Tingcha traded looks of confusion with the other adults. I suppose that could be considered an insult, but... Oh, the insult is the least of it. Shirong looked up, eyes glittering with anger. Spirits and loyalty. You don't understand what Kyoshi did. She made them swear loyalty to the Fire Lord. Huojin was pale. And breaking loyalty can kill you. And usually does. Without a fire healer, Meisheng stated. Mai is lucky and strong and not a firebender. She shook her head. You have no idea how many died defying Sozin. I wouldn't know if Gyokuro hadn't kept the tale for our family. It is not in our history books. There were firebenders who didn't want the war. Tingcha held his children close. Why didn't they simply leave? He asked, voice tight. Not disobey, just avoid the command. Li did. No, he didn't, Shirong said harshly. He was exiled, with orders to find and capture the Avatar, hiding in Ba Sing Se so his own army wouldn't kill him while he tried to do that. That was not disloyal. Not quite. I don't understand, Tingcha admitted. The Avatar is the bridge between our world and the spirits, Shirong stated. I didn't really understand what that meant until Kuei. Well, you saw. If the Earth King can enforce a judgment on Wan Chi Tong himself, what do you think the Avatar can do? Tingcha felt a bit faint. So Avatar Kyoshi's decree... Any Fire Nation citizen who goes against the Fire Lord's authority is defying the will of the spirits, Shirong said bluntly. They'd have as much of a target on their backs as any scarred Dai Li. Alma and Shu, it's no wonder you're all here. Without constant protection from malice, you'd never survive. He chuckled without humor. No wonder the war doesn't hit them with ill luck, for what they've done to our kingdom. They're following the Avatar's orders. Tingcha drew breath to protest. The war had started after Roku's death. There was no way Avatar Kyoshi would have ordered the Fire Nation to attack her own people. Let it go. A lifetime of examining history, forcing him to scrutinize his own logic, even if he hated it. They must follow the Fire Lord. He orders the war to continue. They have no choice. Besides, choose to run and risk everything. You see, the funeral was the key, Shirong remarked into the aching silence. It's customary for the great names to attend, or at least send proxies to affirm they've set aside loyalty to the dead Fire Lord to attend to the living one. If Roku was a friend, I doubt Sozin would have been allowed to associate with many youngsters who weren't great names. If Roku thought his training as the Avatar was more important than showing loyalty to Sozin, he sighed. So much of the Fire Nation is wrapped up in what they don't say. If Roku would not show his loyalty to Sozin, then by default, he was claiming his loyalty to Fire Lord Zogo was more important, and Zogo's request had already been refused by Kyoshi. He smiled ruefully. Sozin was a murderer and a monster and a plague on our kingdom, but I think I would have given up then, too. Oh, Huojin managed. Oh, that's what he meant. That slippery catfish eel. Mushi got out of swearing to Ozai, he explained at Luli's raised brow. He broke his loyalty to Azulon and lived. Hagni only knows how. And he got out of giving it again. He flung up frustrated hands. He's been loose for 6 years. From the Fire Lord, Amaya said somberly. Not the Fire Nation. And he had Lee to look after, who is loyal. Though since his exile, Mushi has been moving with care to strengthen Lee's loyalty to his people so he could survive. Blue eyes widened. So he has. Shirong breathed. Oh, that genius son of a... He laughed, full of startled joy. No wonder we haven't been caught. Dad? Gia muttered under her breath. Is it just me, or has he totally lost it? Gia? Meishan groaned. No, she's right. It is crazy. Still laughing, Shirong wiped away tears. A wonderful, crazy upside down and backwards and breaking everything into pieces. And I don't know if it's Agni or just Lee. Any kid who's chased the Avatar across the world is more than any spirit should count on. He looked up, eyes bright. Lee's an exile. Sozin's blood, yes, and that will bring malicious spirits down on his head whether he's chasing the Avatar or not. But Kyoshi's decree can't touch him. Tingcha frowned. I imagine that would be useful for him. Meishang was smiling at him. We're home. I'm definitely missing something. We haven't left Ba Sing Se, Tingcha pointed out. He has a point, Shirong said dryly. Great name or not, Lee can't set up a domain inside the city. He already has, Meishang said ruefully. Great names hold territory, yes. But the domain is the people. Shirong clapped a hand to his face. I am so doomed. Luli gave them an urchin's look of innocence. Why? Just because you tried to recruit a firebender, helped kidnap the Earth King, and now you're helping us plan to skate Fire Nation refugees who happen to be our families right out from under the Avatar's power? So doomed. Will that work? Huojin asked, skeptical. Some of you, us, we were ordered to go. Doesn't that mean you're loyal to the old lords? And bound in spirit, Amaya nodded, sober. Lee is of Byakko. There aren't many older lords, Meishang said levelly. And he has enough dragon blood to fall prey to the rage. He can shield us. And with fire healers, any who suffer will at least have a chance. Only fire? Tingcha mused. Water can't help, Amaya said sadly. It's the fire in your spirit that bleeds. Water only worsens it. Tingcha nodded thoughtfully. What about earth? All eyes fixed on him. All but Gia's, who had picked up his discarded scroll and was now tracing characters with a look of stunned awe. Is this what I think it is? What? Shirong frowned. One of the scrolls from your stash, Tingcha informed him. A rather neglected one, from the looks of it. Given the content, I can't imagine why. Unless it doesn't work. He trailed off at Chirong's bewildered look. The scroll G is holding? She has a scroll? Tincha blinked. Amaya didn't, moving in with a water-wrapped hand, swift as a striking scorpion viper. Stay still. Showing more iron will than Tincha would have believed possible, Chirong did. Amaya concentrated, eyes closed, lips writhing into a snarl. There you are. Drawing away water tinged with an oily shimmer, she held it as a globe in one cupped hand. Jinhai, burn this. But your hand, the little boy protested. I'll heal. Burn it. She wouldn't ask if it weren't crucial. Hand on his son's shoulder, Tincha nodded. Wide-eyed and shaking, Jinhai cast a flow of flame. Amaya set her jaw and held sizzling water, even as her skin reddened and blistered. Held, muttering quiet, angry prayers to the moon and ocean, until every last drop burned away. Only then did she let her hand fall, tears seeping as Suyin scrambled to help her with her water skin. I'm sorry, Jinhai whispered, clinging to Tincha as water glowed and the stench of burnt flesh faded. Fire purifies, Amaya said somberly. I don't think I would have been able to cleanse that alone. What was that? Chirong was standing his ground, barely, eyes wide as saucers. A spirit's influence, the healer said grimly. Like that fox's touch on Tincha, but more hidden and darker. Catch him! Tincha found himself in the center of a mob supporting Chirong as the agent shivered. What is it? I remember. Chirong blinked, dazed. I have seen that scroll before. I must have tried to read it a dozen times. I just kept forgetting. He rubbed his head. How much is in that cash? We'll have to inventory it all, Tincha agreed. But for now, Amaya, is it a healing scroll? It certainly appears to be, she breathed, as Gia spread it open for her. We'll have to test it. How could we lose something that important? Chirong burst out. The lives that could have been saved, the misery. Bending is easy, Luli mused. Healing? That's hard. That doesn't even make any sense. More sense than you might think, Huojin said practically. Healing, it's sort of at right angles to bending, right?
A counterintuitive use of chi, Amaya nodded. Instinctive bending is meant to protect yourself, like slapping away a violent hand. Healing is giving some of your own energy away. Like Li teaching the children to relax to fall. The only instinctive healers I've ever heard of were tide-touched, and who learns earthbending from the badger moles anymore? The rest of us have to be taught.
Can you teach me? Gia burst out, saw their looks of surprise, and blushed. Well, manners aren't going to help get mean back, and even thinking about fighting makes me all queasy. She gulped. But I want to help.
That's my girl, Tincha said softly,
as Suyin grinned and hugged her sister. Gia rolled her eyes, but didn't push away.
I should stop worrying, Tincha told himself.
Jinhai warmly nestled in his arms as Meisheng drew them all back together. Even Chirong, awkward as the man still was with his new clan.
We may not be what we were, but I believe we're going to be fine.
Chirong drew back, a hint of a smirk on his face.
Don't be so quick to assume manners won't make a difference. Guards, walls, Dai Li, everything we have to get past is tied to one enemy.
Tincha nodded, eyes narrowed.
Princess Azula.
Threaten my boy, will you? He glanced up towards the cavern ceiling and the sleeping city above.
We'll see about that.
dawn, and a bowl of hot water glared obstinately at her, steaming. Azula glared back, coils of steam rising from her breath as she dressed for the day. Move, curse you! Rising from water, a bubble popped. How did Zuko do this? And what had the Dragon of the West kept hidden that let Zuko learn? His tea-bending kookiness, Azula muttered to herself, fixing her hair into strict utilitarian perfection. The man studied waterbenders. Hugni only knows why. After all, what was the point of studying a way of life destined to become extinct? Fire was superior, and the world knew it. And those who didn't know would be ground under armored treads. Still, if the man had learned something useful, he should have said something to a loyal, strong firebender, not her weak idiot of a brother. Unless he's been planning treachery since he first left Ba Sing Se, Azula mused to the mirror. Now that would make sense. Vanishing for months with some stupid story that he'd been on a spiritual quest when he did pop back up. And only a few firebenders could master lightning in the first place. Why hide that he knew a counter unless he had plans against her father? Never. You'll never touch him, Uncle. He is the Fire Lord, and I am his heir, and I am loyal. Not like Zuko. Never like Zuko. Claiming he'd turned traitor to protect her? How stupid did he think she was? Mom asked him to protect you. Right. As if she needed protecting. As if Ursa would have even asked him. Her mother thought she was a monster. Who'd protect a monster? Besides a certain dead idiot. I serve the Fire Lord, loyally. I am the heir now. Everything I've worked for 10 years, is finally in my grasp. Excelling at her studies as her dread father wished, befriending Mai, whose family were not benders, but still held power in the court, partly by guile and true skill at governing, partly by the whispered prestige of Roku's heritage. Befriending Tai Li, daughter of a chi-blocking family, crucial to destroying assassins and maintaining order in the prisons, subtly twisting the girl to her will over the years, shaping the most useful tools to ensure her blockhead of a brother could never, ever be a threat to her position as favored child, as her father had always silently made clear that he was, if only because to be lacking an enemy might lure her to be less than the best, and Prince and then Fire Lord Ozai would never accept less than perfection. Poor Zuko. He'd only survived that Agni Kai because Ozai wanted him to. Exiled, barely existing, banished to do something impossible, and always a reminder of the fate she might be clever enough, quick enough, ruthless enough to avoid. Really, Father, as if I would ever disgrace Sozin's line with anything less than my best performance. Can't you trust me? A silly thought. A Fire Lord trusted no one. Avatar Kyoshi had handed them the power to remake the world. Yet even now, centuries later, there were great names who would gladly see all that power go down in ashes and ruin, who would forgo revenge, and yes, even the self-defense necessary to be certain the world would never, ever ravage the Fire Nation again. If they dared. Traitors, all of them. Traitors who to this day sent men and materials to the war effort, praying to be allowed in turn to protect their domains. So her father left them in place. For now. She'd taken Ba Sing Se without a single soldier. What great name would defy her now? Use my victory, Father, to your glory and crush them all. She'd have to maintain the Dai Li recruitment program.
Fire was superior, but loyal servants to bury your enemies alive were too good a tool to let rust out of existence, especially considering what else she might need to use them against. Spirits, in broad daylight, attacking me. What an uncivilized place. The debacle in the audience chamber would never have happened in the Fire Nation. Fire sages handled these matters. Then again, Ba Sing Se was unimaginably larger than the capital, and the Dai Li had been a bit distracted. I'll have to order some sages assigned here. That should prevent any other fiascos. And demonstrate the benefits of accepting our rule. She smiled slightly. Tend a Komodo rhino, and it will draw any load, even sausages. A truth learned at her father's knee, which made its failure with Mai all the more frustrating. What had she not done to make the girl risk her life-breaking loyalty? She'd nurtured Mai with smiles and discipline, made it subtly clear to the court that Mai's family was in her favor, encouraged the girl's interest in Zuko with subtle hints and a bit of fire play for her brother to rescue Mai from, and terrified exactly the right people to cover up that Momiji and Ela had been sisters. Fraternal descent her people wouldn't have balked at, or if they'd been brother and sister. With at least 3 generations between them, that was perfectly safe. Sororial descent? Azula clicked her tongue in disappointment. She'd seen the Fire Sage's records of the monstrosities possible when that happened. Oh, not physical monsters. Beautiful children. The strongest of firebenders. Yet all too often, missing something. According to the Fire Sages. Dried up old coots. What in the world was wrong with having firebenders who didn't weep over stupid animals? Weakness should be crushed, not coddled. She'd so looked forward to Zuzu's face when she finally told him, right before she took his children. Ah, well, one half of that equation was dead. But Mai did have a little brother. Perhaps she could just borrow him once she'd produced a legitimate heir. And there was the would-be traitor herself, bearing message scrolls, just as if it were any other morning. "Which of these should I see before breakfast?" Azula asked, arching one elegant brow. Pretend, pretend. They were all pretending. And wasn't it fun? If it weren't, she'd burn Mai down on the spot. No one betrayed her.
"The top one might be funny," Mai deadpanned. "I think Earth Kingdom messengers have more brains than their generals."
Intrigued despite herself, Azula unrolled an account of a courier, identified as one of General Gong's, who had headed for Ba Sing Se so fast he'd almost run right into the middle of a fire army encampment, before he'd noticed the wall was down. In between the lines of the formal report, you could all but hear the girly shriek. Pursuit initiated, first hidden remount station located and marked, currently leaving in place while we fix and prepare to destroy the next stations on the route. Azula skimmed out the rest of the report. Good. An intelligent officer. The chase could be left in his hands. For now. Though she did wonder what Gang had wanted out of Ba Sing Se. More supplies? Or something more critical? We have the city. Whatever they wanted, it's out of their reach. Out of habit, she rifled through Mai's pile, looking for whatever had been buried as unimportant. Mai couldn't really lie to her, but it was always good to keep in practice. Well, 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 well. Perhaps she should reevaluate my skill at lying. Suzuran anticipates making port here tomorrow.
So? Mai shrugged. It's a supply ship. I thought you had plenty of supplies.
It's a dumping ground for malcontents and incompetents,
Azula stated, watching her closely.
Assigned to minesweeping duty.
They must be pretty good at finding them to get here, Mai said dryly. Or pretty bad. Not a flinch from the knife thrower. Could she really not know?
You might know their Captain G.
Mai frowned. From where?
Interesting. So, tell her and lay an obvious snare? Or let it go and make the girl work for her treachery?
I'll have her one way or another. Let's make it amusing.
Oh, just one of those discipline problems the Fire Lord means to make an example of. Whenever certain laggards in our government get restless,
she snorted.
A pity I can't make an example out of that guard station.
Damn that, Sergeant.
For reporting a potential insurgency?
Mai's eyes didn't even crinkle in a hint of a smile.
For the way he did it, Azula said in disgust. I don't have to check records. That man must have served with my idiot uncle. If I burn that weevil rat hole down the way it deserves, he'd be standing right in the way of the flames.
Fool.
Her eyes narrowed. What was Father thinking, leaving Zuko in his hands?
That he liked you best, Mai said levelly, and that the only way the court would accept him training you to rule was if somebody at least looked like they were training Zuko. One crown prince to teach the next.
She shrugged, gold eyes glinting hard, before fading back into the mask of apathy.
The crown prince who didn't fight Ozai for the throne, because he knew he'd lose. That's what the rumors said. No one would have been surprised if Zuko went the same way.
Azula smiled, remembering how many of those rumors she'd spread herself.
It's always good to have a backup plan.
Lazily, she glanced at Mai.
So how would you lure these traitors out?
I wouldn't, Mai said flatly. This isn't like New Ozai. They're not an Earth resistance who love hiding out underground. They're Fire Nation, and they're mad. They won't wait forever. Have the Dai Li watch and wait for the fireworks.
Reasonable. Plausible. Oh, it was going to be so much fun crushing them all. Though she'd have to wait on crushing Two and his little network until after Mai made her move. Wouldn't want to miss any of those. Two was a citizen of the Earth Kingdom, if his records were accurate. And they were. Or he had some of the best fakes she'd ever seen. How on earth had Mai known to contact him? Asking that will be very, very amusing. The only way this could get more entertaining was if Mai thought she was clever enough to get Suzuran's help. She was a cowed, beaten man. No one else would take orders from her brother without a fight.
A pity Zuko was already in the Earth Kingdom before the anniversary this year.
After all, what kind of sister would she be to let such an important event pass by without commemoration? Nothing said, you are not forgotten, like attempted mutiny.
Though, pulling her present off this time around might have been a bit trickier. She doubted Uncle had caught on that these were officially ordered mutinies, but he had managed to call in a few favors from the Navy for their latest crew. It'd taken her weeks to even get her hands on the crew records, much less set up the necessary leverage. And then Zhao had smashed her careful plans to bits with one vainglorious invasion. Honestly, how was she supposed to be properly efficient with so many idiots in the way? At least the man had the bare decency to lose himself in that fiasco. Good riddance. One less idiot to derail the march of their empire. two less now, she smirked. And soon to be more. So, breakfast, occupation duties, and plotting. And then, water would bend to her will, one way or another. Land! It was all Toph could do not to kiss it at odd moments. No rocking, no rolling, no meal-stealing nausea from water that just wouldn't stay still. No blindness. Ugh! And on top of that, she got to kick Aang's butt. It didn't get much better. Toph cracked her knuckles, then cracked the ground that had trapped Aang up to his nose when he'd stepped wrong. Watching my hands again, huh? Aang scrambled out, then leapt skywards with a yelp as more seemingly solid layers crumbled into badger mole tunnels. You did all that with your feet? Toes, the earthbender said simply, using them to smooth the rest of the solid ground as Katara and Sokka walked closer to the danger zone. Felt an interested little jig a few feet behind them, and barely kept the grin off her face. The Beto Beto might drive people up the wall most of the time, but it seemed to have good enough sense to back off when the bending started. Which meant Aang wasn't just practicing till he got bored anymore. He'd practice till he thought he was bored. Then he'd take a break, chase a Flutter Hornet or Momo or who knew what, flop down, hear footsteps, and all of a sudden get interested in lessons all over again. Next time she caught Sparky, she had to hug him. Not that Toph was going to let on about that. Why spoil a good thing? I think I'm going to call it Boots, Toph decided. Don't watch me, Twinkle Toes, she said firmly. Watch the ground. Feel it. You feel the air, right? How can anybody not feel air? Aang touched down, feather light. Everybody has to breathe. Except when they're diving after turtle seals, Sokka muttered, too low for anyone else to hear. Toph frowned, wishing she'd been a little less sick and a little more listening when Chief Hakoda had asked them to take Appa and head inland for a while. But about all she'd been up to at the time was adding her nauseated vote to Hakoda's, and Sokka's about staying away from people. Aang was having a hard time with the idea of the world thinks you were dead. Wanted to head back and try to bust up Bossing Say and get himself zapped by Azula again. Well, tough. As Sokka had pointed out a bunch of times, they didn't know exactly how long an eclipse lasted. They needed every edge they could get, including letting the Fire Nation think they could breathe easy. How long that would last, Toph had no idea. Sparky doesn't want us dead, but he's got a volcano of a temper, and he knows Aang's teamed up with the water tribes, and he thinks they're going to kill his people. On top of that, Zuko was living proof he was willing to risk it all to make things right. And what Zuko thought was right? Well, it sure didn't match up with Aang's idea of right. So what's he gonna do? She didn't know, and that made Toph worried. Zuko didn't just face the impossible. He stood his ground when it barreled down on him, threw it into a bamboo thorn thicket, and bashed it over the head. With a rock, if that was all he had. He'd chased the Avatar for half a year. The Avatar! When he didn't even think he was a firebending master. Sure, Aang was a kid. Sure, Aang never tried to kill him. But Aang was an airbending master. Anybody sane would have gone down and stayed down. Zuko wasn't sane. He wasn't seeing things crazy, and he sure wasn't evil crazy like Azula. But he was not walking on the same ground as everybody else. He was a friend, no doubt about it, and she was going to kick his butt in the nicest way to get him to think. But Toph was never going to make the mistake of thinking Zuko was sane, reasonable, or even human. Not Twice, anyway. Funny thing was, it didn't bother her. The badger moles had been better family than her own. Sometimes. And Zuko tried really, really hard to figure out where her lines in the sand were and how not to cross them. Crazy, yeah, but he was decent. One of the best. But he had lines, too. Deep ones. And Aang had just blown through them like they didn't matter. Do that with a badger mole, it'd bury you in the mountain or rip you to shreds. Zuko hadn't done either. Fire needs revenge, so whatever he's up to, it's gonna hurt Aang worse. Darn it. If only they'd had a few more days to talk. She could have gotten that plan out of Uncle eventually. She just knew it. At least she could have maybe gotten Zuko to talk more about the Dai Li. Those earth shoes might just be a good idea in some places. But I don't want to fight you, Aang protested. Sokka was hefting his boomerang, stance set and determined. I'm not saying we have to fight. I just want you to practice making sure Boomerang doesn't hit you. It's not like the Fire Nation uses boomerangs. Yeah, well, I haven't got arrows to shoot at you, Sokka said, sounding even less happy about it than Aang. You said those Yu Yan caught you, right? Oh, yeah. Aang shook his head, amazement shivering from his toes. I knew some people in the Fire Nation were archers. Kuzan snuck away with me to see some once. Whoa, did he ever get in trouble for that? But I never saw anybody shoot like that, ever. So why haven't we ever seen them chasing us again? Sokka asked pointedly. Silence. Aang gulped. Come on, Sokka, you know that didn't work. They know somebody in a mask broke you out after you were captured, Sokka said bluntly. That's not exactly didn't work. We're using the eclipse so they won't firebend, Aang protested. And Zuko broke you out without firebending, Sokka shot back. They fight, Aang. They teach everybody to fight. Yeah, we're hitting them during the eclipse. Yeah, they won't have fire. My anti-Li ring a bell? No fire? Doesn't exactly stop them? It's just in case, Katara jumped in. Just practice making boomerang go somewhere Sokka didn't aim it. A shift of her weight, looking toward Toph. You've been working so hard on earthbending. Not as hard as Toph would like, but yeah, this would work. Good idea, Toph agreed. Work with air some. Get all loosened up. She slapped a fist into her palm. So I can grind you into the boulders later. Sometimes, Toph, you scare me, Sokka muttered. Slung an arm over Aang's shoulders, heading back towards where Appa and Momo were doing their best to strip a thorny bush of fruit. Now, the thing to remember is, Boomerang always comes back. Katara shifted her weight to watch them go and sighed. We need to talk. This have anything to do with why you're not pushing Aang to figure out air healing? Toph said wryly. Tapping her toes on the ground, inviting Boots to hang around them instead of pestering Aang while sharp things were flying at his head. Save that for later. I don't see you trying to get him to work on that with Earth, Katara said pointedly. Don't think so, Toph shrugged, feeling silent tippy-tap sneaking up behind Katara. Not that she thought the spirit was out to trip Katara, not this time. As long as it was daylight, it seemed to stick to just sneaking. Unless Aang acted like he was forgetting about it, at which point Boots got pushy as an overfed cat owl. I'm a rumble fighter, Toph went on. I hit things. They stay down. Healing? I don't have a clue. If somebody's so hurt it's me or nothing, I'll try it. Anything else, I'm calling you. Or a Saivik.
Or better yet, Sparky, if I can get him.
Know what I think we should do? Find some nice guy earthbender who wants to help people. I can get him started, and he can figure it out. Not sure I ever will, I like messing people up too much.
Haru,
Katara blurted out. Toph rocked back a little, surprised. You know somebody?
The Earthbenders in his village were all taken away to a Fire Nation prison barge. I kind of got him captured, Katara admitted. We set it up so Aang could make me look like an Earthbender, and when the Fire Nation took me, Sokka and Aang followed us. We got coal to the prisoners, and they threw all the soldiers overboard.
She nodded.
Haru's kind. He got caught because I asked him to help someone. If you showed him, I know he could do it.
Sounds like a plan, Toph said, relieved. Flicked a finger, sending a stone skating across the ground for Boots to pounce on. A barge? Is that where you lost your necklace?
I think so. That weevil rat! Did he tell you what he did with it? First, he tried to get me to give up Aang for it. Then he used it so this big, nose-seeing thing with a bounty hunter could smash up a whole abbey.
Whoa, easy, just checking, Toph said plainly. Zuko's version of events had been a little less villainous, but not by much. The Firebender had admitted he was tracking down an enemy of the whole Fire Nation. Bribes, bounty hunters, eel-hounding somebody to the ends of the earth. Zuko wasn't exactly proud of any of it. But he'd do it all over again. In a heartbeat.
And somehow, that poked at her ideas of just what Zuko might do next. If she could only figure out how. Anyway, Katara let out an angry huff, calming herself down. Air nomads are peaceful. We know that.
I know what Aang's like, Toph shrugged.
And a few things Iroh and Zuko said.
That's about it.
They were. Gran told us about them.
Okay, Toph agreed. So what's the problem?
Katara sucked in a breath, probably biting her lip.
Why would a healer carry a sword?
Oh, wow.
Never mind, Katara said impatiently. It doesn't matter. It must have been a long time ago.
Maybe somebody didn't want her getting to the good guys, Toph broke in.
But she was a bender.
Not everybody's got as much chi to throw around as Twinkle Toes, Toph said seriously. Healing takes it out of you. Just fixing Aang up a little. I've come out of rumbles feeling better.
I know, but...
Toph waited, letting silence do the work for her.
Bending is a gift from the spirits, Katara said at last. If we don't trust the spirits, who are we? Just look at the Fire Nation, all coal and steel and burning down forests and hurting people. Ugh!
Toph frowned.
Well, they're wrong.
Give me a minute, Toph said impatiently. I'm thinking about it. And not liking everything she was thinking.
I guess I owe Sokka an apology.
Maybe a couple. Your tribe uses swords. They're made out of whale teeth, but they're still sharp, pointy things.
They have to, Katara said practically. They're not benders.
Definitely owe Snoozles an apology, Toph decided. So, if Ty Lee got your bending again, you wouldn't use a sword?
I probably wouldn't even be able to move.
But Zuko could. Coal burns, Toph said seriously.
That doesn't have anything to do with the spirits.
Maybe not water spirits, Toph said impatiently. You guys use ice for everything. You even make houses out of it. Why can't the Fire Nation use fire?
They don't firebend to keep their ships and tanks and drills running.
Katara brushed it off.
And your dad doesn't waterbend to keep his ships sailing either, Toph pointed out. You sound like you think what they're doing is right.
Water sloshed in Katara's water skin.
Well, it's not. It's not fair. It's not what the spirits want. Forget Zuko. None of them have any honor.
Maybe I should try healing after all, Toph thought sourly.
feeling stone skitter back across the ground her way. And stop, as Boots felt the chill in the air. Even if I just end up sneezing dust, it might help the headache. Though she couldn't blame Katara for still being mad at Zuko, that letter had been kind of like getting flattened by house-sized hailstones. No way to see it coming, and nothing you could do afterwards but pick up the pieces. Damn, but Sparky was good. I wish I'd been on Kyoshi Island last winter. Could have snagged them all and helped Uncle talk them around. Well, maybe. Zuko was as stubborn as an earthbender, and he'd probably been a lot crankier. We're on dry land. If you're so mad you want to run off and leave Aang twisting in the wind with Sokka, I'm right behind you. I'm not angry at Aang, she says, freezing every drop of water in 20 feet, Toph thought wryly. He doesn't care about Mom, Katara whispered at last. How could he not care? When we found Gyatso's skeleton, he almost blew everything off the mountain. Why? She hugged herself, chilled. Why can't he see I feel like that? He didn't have a mom, Toph reminded her. He had a teacher. He probably thinks you ought to get broken up like that over Paku, only Paku's still alive. Paku? Katara sputtered. He taught you, right? Like you're teaching Aang? And didn't that make her stomach move a bit queasy, dry land or not? Katara, as the teacher Aang had a crush on, she'd overheard stuff like that at the arena, and it never seemed to be good. Paku? Katara repeated, shocked. Air! Toph jabbed a finger towards where Boomerang was whirring through the wind, then pointed at Katara. Water! Jabbed a thumb at herself. Earth! We're in this together, but we started from different places. That's not wrong, just the way it is. So we have to work harder to work together? We can do that. She crossed her arms. First we win, then we fix things. You sound like Sokka, Katara sighed. He's a pretty cool guy sometimes, Toph admitted. Too bad he'd met Suki first. So, you need another person for this calm you down meditation stuff? I was going to do it with Aang. Do it more with Aang later, when you've already cooled down, so you can show him better, Toph suggested. When Aang would need it, given that she could feel the whisper steps of Boots sneaking that way. Please? I want to feel it. Maybe it'll help me figure out seawater. What are you doing with seawater? Katara asked warily. Toph grinned.
And again, Iroh said patiently, hand against hand as he felt his nephew's inner fire wax and wane. He felt a ruffled chirp, but trusted the rest of the crew and Asahi's own good sense to keep the ostrich horse clear while they practiced. It seemed his intuition had been correct. Modifying Amaya's tide push meditation did give Zuko a better grasp on his fire. Unfortunately, that still wasn't saying much. If we had another week, even, to bring it under control. But they did not. Iroh drew a breath and nodded. Enough. Zuko stepped back, sweating in the sunlight dappling the rear decks. Though perhaps more in the heat of attentive eyes, Iroh mused, noting with some humor how Zuko tried to avoid the gazes on him. It seemed his nephew had grown used to being overlooked. It's still not good enough, is it? Zuko's voice was quiet, not so much resigned as simply accepting an unpleasant fact. To pass unnoticed anywhere near Azula? No, it will not be, Iroh said frankly. But you have passed as a common firebender before. We will simply need to be careful. Zuko frowned. She missed me in the palace. Oh? Iroh raised a brow, curious. Either Azula had been unusually distracted, or... At what distance?
maybe 15 feet. Iroh blinked. Straight up, Zuko added, reddening a little. Iroh made himself breathe and reminded himself that now was not the time to chew his entirely too brave nephew out for taking what must have been the very best of bad options.
I would say that was a bit risky.
Only if she looked up, Zuko said sheepishly, shrugged a bit. I used to do it back in the capital. It didn't always work at first. Those Marines practicing in earshot weren't even pretending not to listen now, Iroh realized ruefully. He couldn't blame them. To hide from someone with Azula's mastery of inner fire?
How?
He didn't want to be found, Sergeant Kyo said dryly. Right, sir? No one wants to be found by my sister, Sergeant, Zuko said wryly. Not what I'm talking about, the graying sergeant said plainly. Do it now. Zuko frowned, but seemed to settle himself and breathed out. Gone. Brows arched, Iroh searched for the sense of his nephew's fire. The young man was standing right before him, yet all he could feel was his own fire. The other benders, the sunlight warming the deck. Sunlight on the deck.
You have hidden your fire against the warmth around you, Iroh breathed. How?
I don't know, Zuko admitted, as Asahi stalked over for a scratch, judging practice over. It's like sticking to shadows. You're the one who gave me the book.
Which book?
Iroh inquired. If anyone had said he was a bit wary of the answer, he would have denied it. To not be seen is to be invisible, Zuko quoted.
Waves in moonshadow.
Iroh didn't quite bury his head in his hands. Yes, a fine read for a young child, full of Wegu and epic sea battles and young warriors who dared to sneak even into dragon caves. And Azula had frightened his nephew more than any dragon.
Sergeant Kyo cleared his throat. Not a bad book to start an Akuma Komainuko off on, in my experience. He smiled slightly. Anyone who can sneak past Private Suke Kuni and Lieutenant Teruko while they're looking for him is doing something right.
Devil Lion Puppy, Iroh inclined his head to the Marine, amused and grateful. His nephew's startled look at being called a baby Marine was priceless.
I have always suspected the Marines kept a few tactics in reserve.
Like we say, General, if you can choose what to bring to a fight, bring a firebender, a swordsman, and all their friends. The sergeant said wryly. It's a state of mind. You have to make yourself part of the landscape. Not everybody can pull it off.
He shrugged, deliberately casual.
Besides, that's our job. Sneak in and scare the demons out of the enemy so you ground pounders can burn them down like a dry field.
He looked over them both as Lieutenant Teruko came back down to the deck from consulting with Captain G.
Now that the sneaking part's a little more likely, there's not much that can scare Azula.
Zuko said honestly, scratching along an interested neck.
She has the Dai Li following her, and they hunt man-eating Kamui. We can surprise them. We might even shock them, but we're not going to scare them.
He frowned over the lake waters. Even if we could get in and out without a trace, and Sergeant, I am never that lucky. She's going to have a fast ship to chase after us. Or she'll hunt down the ground evacuation. Lieutenant Teruko almost said something. Iroh held up a hand for silence. Fingers buried in black feathers, Zuko scowled.
Where are the ferries?
I doubt any more refugees will be making use of Full Moon Bay, Iroh observed. Not with our army within Ba Sing Se's very walls.
Yes, but where are the ferries? His nephew said impatiently. The merchant ships, the fishing fleets. Some of them ought to be out this far. Goldeyes narrowed, and Asahi followed his gaze with her own lazy blink. Lieutenant, you'd make a good pirate.
Sir?
Teruko said through clenched teeth. That sounded a lot better in my head, Zuko said faintly. I meant...
Won't work, Kyo said bluntly. Not unless you can give us an idea who and what are where in the harbor.
What will not work? Iroh almost asked, but held his tongue. If Zuko had found an answer...
Yes, I can, Zuko said, half amazed. You wouldn't believe how I know, Sergeant, but I know Bossing Se's docks as well as Amaya does.
He looked straight at Teruko. And if we can get under the city, I think we can get willing crews. She winced, obviously trying not to rub at a headache.
Sir, you're not...
No one else can do this, Lieutenant.
Unfortunately, he is correct, Iroh sighed. The Earth King would be insulted by one of lesser rank.
The Earth King, sir? Kyo raised a brow. Won't the princess have him by now? She'd keep it quiet if she did, if it were up to her, Zuko stated. Azula's always 20 moves ahead. She knows it'd be better to keep people guessing. If it were up to her, Kuei would be a figurehead right now. The walls would still be up, and she'd have every Earth army ordered into range to be obliterated. But it's not.
My brother favors an open display of victory, especially when it will be most crushing to his enemy's spirits.
Iroh agreed, thinking on that short, touchy, and surprisingly informative message Suzuran had received from Master Sergeant Yakume. Information carried almost as much in how it had been written as the text itself. The tone might be barely civil, but the words were as formal as any experienced officer reporting to, well, to a general.
Yakume knows I am on this ship, but I do not think he has told Azula.
At least, he had not at the time of the message. Yakume was an honorable man, but Zuko's sister could be entirely too persuasive.
For his sake and ours, I hope not.
Iroh disliked building plans on hope. Still, whatever Yakume might have let slip, there was no way Azula would believe her brother had survived. If Azula doesn't have the Earth King, he's hiding, Zuko went on, letting Asahi press against him. If he's hiding, there aren't that many people who can hide him. Either he's with our people, or they'll know how to find him.
And if the Earth King's not inclined to be persuaded, sir?
Teruko said bluntly. Zuko smirked. Then we ask the captains who they want to take their chances with. After we get far enough from the city, we'll let them go.
Azula won't, hung in the air like smoke.
Teruko glanced subtly at her sergeant, who nodded ever so slightly.
All right, let's take this up to the captain, Teruko decided. It might work, sir, but we are going to need all the details on this harbor we can drag out of your head. Both of you, sir, she added, glancing at Iroh. I know you must have taken the harbor into account in your siege plans.
Indeed he had, though he had never seen it until that day on the ferry.
We are at your disposal, Lieutenant.
He couldn't help but smile.
Uncle, Zuko said warily, an equally suspicious beak suddenly swiveling to glare Iroh's way.
Iroh chuckled.
If we are to defy Avatar Kyoshi's decree, we may as well be thorough.
He smirked.
Wegu indeed.
They look too good to be pirates, Saluen said thoughtfully, perched at the wave runner's rail, to peer across brackish water at the sleek red and dark trim of the fast little ship docked among the oak mangroves. Steel,
Fire Nation to the bone if that smokestack was anything to go by. Yet, anchored among the odd little wood and skin boats plying this estuary like an unagi curled up and smirking as the fishing fleet sailed by, that elbow jab she felt even through armor. "Like people who want to cut your throat can't be neat," Lungsway hissed. "Well, sometimes," she admitted, switching her gaze to the swamp flatboat racing toward them with the weirdest waterbending she'd ever seen, spray rising behind it like rapids. Shaking her head, she eyed the stout, smirking man supervising the lowering of a rope ladder. "Me, their dear captain. She didn't have a real high opinion of me at the moment."
"We're sailing straight to Omashu," he said.
"Unagi's toothpicks, we are." But Saluan smiled and breathed deeply, just as one of the more friendly sailors passed by, instigating a dropped jaw, a stammer, and a threatening slosh of hot tar out of a bucket before Longsway gave him enough of a shove to counterbalance. "Hey, Shu," Saluan purred. "Who are all these guys?" Longsway glared at the man, a palm full of water clinking into spiked ice. Saluan stifled a giggle as Shu sobered fast. Sailors were the same everywhere. Some of them had hearing problems. The word "no," for instance. Even if "no" came with the visual illustration of sprained wrists. Not broken wrists, unfortunately. She might have paid their passage, but a captain flexible enough with the law and custom to help her sneak out an orphaned waterbender wasn't exactly going to cry a river if his disgruntled crew decided to dump them over the side. Sleazeball. Pincushion sailors with ice, though, and their ears suddenly started working. Jarred, maybe, by the reminder that Longsway was a waterbender, and dumping them over the side might be the last thing anyone wanted to do.
"Well," Shu started, "this is the edge of the foggy swamp. I know it's kind of surprising there are waterbenders here."
"The Fire Nation guys," Longsway said bluntly.
"Oh, right,
Shu sweated a little. Maybe it was the heat.
"Don't worry about him."
"About Fire Nation?" Saluan said pointedly.
"Yeah, well, see the flag?"
She saw, too, the black flame of the Fire Nation, clear and pristine, and flying precisely below that, a three-quarter-sized flag of a blue mountain on a sunset-shaded field. "Why does a Fire Navy ship have two flags?" Saluan said bluntly.
"It's not Navy," Shu said uncomfortably. "That's a domain flag. Look, that's Byakko. Don't go spreading it around, but they're not bad, even if they are kind of off."
His voice dropped to a confiding whisper. "They eat bugs." Saluan's jaw dropped, though probably not for the reasons Shu was thinking of. Kyoshi Island had picked up some odd habits from their waterbending kin, compounded by living on an island. If you wanted meaty, fatty, mouthwatering goodness that wasn't fish or chicken pig, there were options. The elders probably would have told the Avatar they were river shrimp if they'd served any of such options at all. Apparently, air nomads were vegetarians. Food. Real food that wasn't dried mutton beef or salted fish. From that sudden glint in Longsway's eyes, he was just as tempted as she was to jump overboard and go raid a Fire Nation galley. Not that she was going to admit it. Mainlanders had some pretty harsh things to say about people eating anything that squirmed. Wimps. "Your shaman wants what?" Me blustered. The stocky swamper in leaves, leather, and bamboo heaved a put-upon sigh. "How many times do we gotta tell ya? Hui's no shaman.
He just sees what is. Whoa, spooky, there they are.
Stomping over the deck, he ducked and touched his leaf hat. Ma'am, young'un, the moon, bless her heart, dropped in on Hui. Said you might be headed this way and could use a hand if the tides came out right.
Dropped in?
Saluan echoed faintly. She shone on the tree, ma'am. He gave her a wry smile. Hui's kind of funny that way. He was wearing about as much clothes as she'd go to a summer beach in public. And he thought someone else was weird.
Well, now, I'd be tho, he said gravely. That's Dwe down there on the boat waiting for us. And you might be?
She's Kyoshi warrior Saluan, Longsway said firmly. I'm Longsway. Why does the moon want you to do anything? We're on a ship already. We need to get north soon.
Do, huh?
Tho cast a speculative glance at Captain Mi, who was giving them a smile oily enough that Saluan wanted soap. Or maybe a torch.
Well, might could be y'all did not impress upon the captain the seriousness of y'all's situation.
My men need a break, Mi said bluntly. We need to pitch seams, resupply with fresh water, rest a little. He smirked at her. Of course, if we had some incentive to get underway a bit faster.
I hate him a lot,
Saluan decided, subtly gripping Longsway's shoulder before the little Yaoren could go for his sword.
Well, if you're all going to be so busy, she chirped, we should just get out of your way for the day. Don't you think so?
Guan Yin be thanked he didn't try to push it. Yet. Saluan boarded the little boat behind Longsway, taking a deep breath to steady herself, and managed not to scream it all out again, as Dwe windmilled his arms and took their craft off like a bolt of lightning.
Awesome!
Saluan watched Longsway lean into the breeze, grinning like a maniac, and slapped down her own impulse to panic. This wasn't the Yaoren, or even the little warrior who took every lesson she taught to heart. This was the kid who should have grown up on his family's boat, happy in the wind and water and salt. Let him have his fun, Saluan told herself, as Dwe added his own giggling laugh, showing off with a slalom through the water for a fellow bender.
Spirits know we could all use some.
They zipped through the small maze of floating docks and salt-stippled trees, slipping out of sight of the wave runner in minutes, vrooming around to raise quite a bit more rainbow glittering spray, until Tho and Dwe exchanged nods, and Dwe shifted to an almost sedate glide through the water. A glide that brought them to dock just by the Byakko ship, still out of the wave runner's view. Why was she not surprised? But they didn't head on board, which did surprise her. Instead, Tho brought them up onto the dock, argued with his maybe cousin as the two swampers tied up, and sat back down in the boat with Dwe to wait. Politely, at a distance. With a lot of splashing involved as the pair of them got out a net to go after little fish swarming under the dock. If she hadn't been watching towards the Fire Nation ship, she'd never have seen the noble coming. Old, given that full head of snowy hair, pulled up and back in an antique phoenix tail. Not tall, even for Fire Nation. She'd put him at least 2 inches shy of her own height. But an easy stride, katana and wakizashi thrust through his belt with quiet confidence. I do not want to start a fight with this man. Oddly, she didn't think she'd have to. Those long white whiskers of a mustache twitched with what seemed like relief. And his eyes? I've never seen eyes like that. Ever. Saluan let out her own breath of relief. Whoever he was better than she was. And they both knew it.
and he had no intention of fighting. Spirits, she almost felt like crying. We're safe. We're finally... What am I thinking? He's Fire Nation. With the oddest outfit she'd ever seen. Oh, the robe wasn't too outlandish. Wrapped in a belt to carry those swords. But the clasps at the right shoulder and the slit sides for free movement that reminded her of stuff she'd seen on merchants from the edges of the Earth Kingdom. But on top of that, he was wearing an odd, long-sleeved outer. Not exactly a robe. It seemed to be only secured by one tie in the front, a flow of deep red silk with black triangles hemming the sleeves, like mountains or flames. Not black, Saluan realized, as sunlight shimmered with indigo glints. Very, very dark blue. Why is a Fire Nation noble wearing watercolors? And why was Longsue eyeing him like he couldn't decide whether to hug the man or cut him down on the spot? Could you make it any more obvious? Longsue challenged. A white brow went up.
Obvious, am I?
A baritone chuckle, without even a hint of the cracks of age. You're not even sweating! Selwyn blinked, breathing in the muggy air off the swamp. How could she have missed that? She was sweating. Longsway's hair was so damp it was spiky, and the noble looked like it was a nice spring gentle day.
I am old enough to do as I wish, young man, the elder said dryly. And those of Byakko are known for being old-fashioned. Who am I to deny custom?
Which was a twisty enough statement to make Saluan narrow her eyes at him. There'd been an odd pause in his voice before custom, like he was leaving something important out. Human custom, Longsue said flatly. Saluan's eyes widened. Oh no. Oh hell. Oh, Oma and Shu, how do I get us out of here? It's okay. Longsue grabbed her left hand before she could move, still gazing at the noble. He's help. He hesitated. I think.
Are you certain?
The elder said levelly. If you were a dark dragon, La wouldn't have asked Hui to help us meet. Longsue said firmly. A dark dragon? Saluan wondered. The dragons are dead.
Don't be so certain, came the growl of a reply. Your lady can be cruel if it serves her purposes.
He gripped the bridge of his nose and let out a gusting sigh, with only a hint of steam curling from his lips.
But done is done, and my grandson will need your help, as I know you need his.
He bowed, hands in the flame.
I am Shidan of Byakko. And yes, warrior, I am help. Much as it may gall me, I have nurtured plans to protect those of my domain longer than you can imagine, and to have them overthrown in one throw of the spirit's dice.
Another sigh, but humor glinted in pale gold again.
We of the flesh plan, and those of the spirit act, and all of us must ride the storm and pray.
Would someone like to talk so I can get what's going on? Saluan scowled, looking between them both with malice aforethought. You'd better sit down, Longsue advised. I'm not sitting down, Saluan fumed. If this is about not scaring me, forget it. You're too late. This is a fire noble who says the moon sent him. Doesn't that seem just a little wrong? He's a dragon, Saluan. Gaping, Saluan sat on rocking wood. Shidan folded himself gracefully down to match, sheathed swords pulled free to rest against his shoulder.
No screams, warrior. Either you don't believe, or you're blessed with a braver heart than I would have hoped.
I don't not believe, Saluan managed, still staring. But... Fire Lord Sozin hunted the dragons. They're dead.
Indeed he did,
And so it has been thought, Shidan said gravely. Those of us who did survive have gone to great lengths to be sure rumor is considered truth. He eyed Longsway again. Yet another reason I am not amused at your lady. A slow breath, and he shook his head. But we have common foes, and none of us has time for wounded pride.
What foes? Saluin pounced, glad to be back on firmer ground. So, to speak. Enemies were killable. Well, most of them were. Ko might be another matter. Focus. The only enemies we've got are the Fire Nation, Saluen drove on, not bothering to hide her narrowed eyes. So unless you're planning to help us take them on...
I hope I will not be driven to such lengths, Shidan said soberly. True, it may come to that, but I fear Makoto will find us first.
Longsway stiffened. Saluen tried not to shiver. Someone you remember?
No. No way. That was 1,000 years ago. No one could.
Dragons live a long, long time, Longsway whispered, turned a look on Shidan of mingled anger and despair.
Spirits, why hasn't somebody killed her?
Many have died trying, Shidan said dryly. Those of my clan said she was cornered once, before Kiyoshi came. He sighed. And a century ago, she found yet another way to elude challenges. You knew her as Makoto long ago. But in the Fire Nation, she was Fire Lady Tejina, wife of Sozin and mother of Azulon.
Father of Fire Lord Ozai,
Saluen swallowed dryly.
The Fire Lord isn't human.
Azulon's dead.
Yes, assassinated within the walls of his very palace, Shidan said with grim satisfaction. Makoto has never forgiven my kin for that, nor will she, ever. Yet, even if she cares nothing for us, she has very good reasons to hone her thoughts on us, young warriors. She, too, remembers the Yauren better than you can, young one. No matter how Law has meddled. Far better than I, who was not even hatched when the last Yauren walked this earth. She knows you are her enemy. She knows you will move against her.
He frowned.
I have clouded my grandson's trail. Our blood is wave as well as mountain. It can hide even the moon's pull if she is not close. But you, young one...
Gold eyes were level.
By now, Ko knows of you, and he will find a way to act. Makoto has been his ally before. I do not doubt she will be so again.
And you're not strong enough to stop her, Longsway said quietly. Saluen winced. Oh, that's Tornit. We're going to have blood and limbs and all kinds of nasty.
True.
Shidan acknowledged, obviously less than pleased to admit it.
My lady and I have kept Makoto's accursed nose out of our territory, as my parents did before me, and theirs before them. Byakko is safe. But that is wit and cunning. Even if the battle should come to pure strength and fire, she is old, little Yauren. Old and hateful and evil. And her beloved is dead these many decades. She is wings and claws and flame, and I?
He inclined his head slightly, a rueful smile.
I am what you see.
But you're a dragon, Saluen blurted out, because it was impossible. It had to be. But Longsway believed it. A night or a lifetime. Longsway murmured. I should know. I just...
Agni's gifts always have their cost.
Shidan nodded.
As I said, for so long as my lady lives, I am what you see.
Teeth glinted in his smile.
Though that is no small thing, and I will aid you. My lady would prefer I do so and come back in one piece, but for our grandson, she will understand if I must take risks.
A quiet laugh.
She'll likely thank you for the need later. Chosen fate or not, I grow restless if I stay too long chained in customs and civility. And you offer me the chance to threaten a few mortals and help my true lord's sister?
A curled lip flashed a fang.
How can I refuse?
We can't offer you anything, Saluen said pointedly.
No, Shidan allowed. Not yet.
He regarded them both.
Warrior, I offer aid. I offer help. I cannot heal your wound, young Yauren, but I can buy you time. And in regard to time,
he gestured at his ship.
Nami no Kizu is faster than any craft you can hire, and a great name's husband can pass through many barriers, even those of steel and fire.
He can get us past Fire Navy blockades, Longsway said in an undertone. If he wants to. Saluen shot back, not bothering to lower her voice. If this isn't some kind of crazy Fire Nation trap, how are you even here if we need you so much? And don't tell me about spirits or luck. I don't have luck anymore.
Except bad.
You'll have much in common with my grandson then, Shidan said dryly. And you may only partly blame the spirits for this. I may be what you see, but I am still spirit enough to sense the fires of my kin and of my grandchildren. And only a bit more than a month ago, I felt La drown my grandson.
Longsway winced.
She did it the hard way.
Indeed.
Shidan nodded. I knew he was not dead, but...
He sighed.
This is not the first time I have felt Agni consider sharing one of his children. Decades ago, I combed the world for spirit healers and found... Well, for good or ill, that firebender was never chosen. But I feared greatly for my grandson. It took time to arrange my absence from Byakko, and when my lady and I had nearly managed it, I felt him healed.
He shrugged ruefully.
Given the chance of Makoto's peril, Kotone and I decided I would go away, but a bit more quietly and slowly. Those who know Byakko know we trade with the Foggy Swamp, and those who think they know us know we seek information on the war, and will be on the hunt for it in the wake of what happened at the North Pole. He inclined his head. So I am here.
Normally, Shaluen was good at reading people, but Shidan had admitted he wasn't exactly a person. And even if he sounded sincere, I don't trust you.
Shaluen!
Longsway hissed.
Let her speak, Shidan said sternly. My kind prefer the most ruthless truths to lies.
He inclined his head.
And how should I be offended? I have given you no reason you can touch, only my words, that I will not lie to you. You do not know our kind. You do not know it is truth.
Saluin's jaw dropped before she caught it again. Fire attacked, always, and he just let her assault slide away. You don't lie? Then why are you wearing blue?
A custom of Byakko.
Fingernails prying a splinter loose from the dock, he breathed it into flame and beckoned. Flame rippled out in a crackling stream, flowing about his hands as he rose and moved. Liquid amber, it spiraled and lashed, deceptively slow, never still, ever shifting.
Wave Clan, Longsway blurted out. Your flag is a mountain, but you're a Wave Clan.
We are both,
Shidan acknowledged, letting flame flow back to the splinter before he blew it out.
Though the heart of the wave, we must keep hidden from all but a few. For the power to heal is the power to let those of true loyalty defy the Fire Lord, and Sozin would let none who defied him survive.
Fire that heals? Saluen said in disbelief. Fire can't heal.
Yes, it can, Longsway said soberly. Yes, it can. All the Wave Clans are healers.
Sea Green narrowed. So come up with a better story, because there's no way Sozin could wipe out half his own people.
He trailed off, suddenly pale, clapped a hand over his mouth and breathed hard.
Saluen kind of felt like tossing their poor excuse for a breakfast herself. All the old stories, the old jokes about Kyoshi and the Wagyu.
You do not trust me, warrior of Kyoshi.
Shidan's tones were velvet over steel.
I've no reason to trust you, save that we may have common allies, and we most certainly have a common enemy.
He nodded once.
I offer a temporary alliance. Should we choose to travel together, I will defend you, and I will expect the same. Within limits.
He scowled at Longsway.
I know the wound you carry, and I will not have you worsen it. The world needs you alive.
He glanced down.
And that shames me. It shames us all. You are young, barely fledged. I should stuff you back into the nest and fight.
He sighed.
But the world is not so kind.
Silence fell. Saluen swallowed and eyed Longsway.
Temporary alliance?
I hate your guts, but we both hate the other guy's guts more, Longsway filled in. So we bury the hatchet and both kick his butts first.
Saluen raised an eyebrow and looked over them both.
So you got a good reason to go north?
Indeed, Shidan smirked. I bring my clan the fortuitous news of a granddaughter. Those in Pohai Stronghold are not as close kin as some of those here, but they will be relieved to know the domain's line is secure.
Kin? There are dragons in the swamp?
Saluen blurted out.
Shidan chuckled.
Not quite.
And if that wasn't an I've got a secret smirk, she'd eat her lotus tile.
Pohai Stronghold, huh? Saluen mused.
Wow, that just happens to be on the way to Gaipan.
By some quirk of fate, yes, it is.
Shidan smiled wryly. Steeling herself, she gripped his arm in a warrior's clasp.
So, what are we waiting for?